Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening today. It's going to be a pleasurable show today. We have Dr. James Lane, who is the superintendent of public instruction for the great Commonwealth of Virginia. All right, and we're going to talk about Virginia's statewide strategy for digital learning. And this was in place, although I'm sure it's changed because of the pandemic, but it was in place or starting to be in place before the pandemic. Okay, we're going to see how that worked out over the whole course of time, et cetera. And Dr. Lane, as I said, is superintendent of public instruction for the Commonwealth of Virginia. So it's going to be a great show. We're going to archive the show, as we always do, over at our website, which is ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That is the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, and it is free to all educators. We have our wonderful online journal over there, which is so well-read, called Equity and Access. Please go over there. You'll see a big icon over to ace-ed.org. Click on the magazine cover and enjoy what is a wonderful magazine. And we have all of our podcasts over there as well. Everything we do is free for educators. We want to hear your voice in equity. Please, the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org. And without further ado, let me bring on the superintendent. Okay, Dr. Lane, how are you today? I'm Larry.
Larry, I'm doing great. Glad to be with you today.
It's a pleasure, Dr. Lane. How should I address you? Do you like Dr. Lane? Do you like James? Do you like Jim? What should I call you?
Anything's fine. James is fine.
James is fine, and James it shall be. So first of all, I must ask, okay, I have to say this. You began your educational career as a band director. You guys wrote me that, and I'm going to take a shot and say, was it trumpet that you played? What did you play?
I definitely was a trumpet player as my primary interest, instrument. You know, as a band director, we had to learn them all, but primarily
yep.
a trumpet player. Yeah.
Right, and I was thinking about that. I have another good friend who runs the National Association of Elementary School Principals. His name is Earl Franks. He's from Alabama, and he was also a band director, okay, and a trumpet guy, which is kind of what led me to think about that for you. And I'm finding that being a band director, I bet it helps you to get organized. You can get everybody marching in the same direction. What do you think, Dr. Lane?
Yeah, I'd like to think of the work that we do as conducting just like a band director and orchestra director would. You know, it's getting the assessment team moving in the right direction, getting instruction going, operations. Think of that like clarinets and flutes and trumpets. And, yeah, so I think that part of the way that I visualize my work on a daily basis is like I'm a conductor just helping everybody
there
to get
go.
Their parts better every day. Yeah.
There you go. Okay. And did you have, when you were band director, where were you? I just want to ask about this just before we get started on this. Where were you when you were band director?
Yeah. I taught in Durham, North Carolina. So my first teaching job was at a year round school, actually, in Durham. And
wow.
Amazing program. Yeah.
Wow. Very good. You moved out to Virginia. There you go, a neighboring state. Absolutely excellent. Okay. We got to talk about this because I love the way this was set up for me here. Okay. Your statewide strategy for digital learning. Oh, by the way, we're doing this show, and I got to thank them, my good friends over at the Council of Chief State School Officers. Thank you, everybody over there, for getting Dr. Lane on board with me. Okay. James, okay, let me ask. Okay. Digital learning has been around, and you guys, I know, were focused on it before the pandemic. Then the pandemic hits. Okay, talk about before and during. And we're coming up on a year, amazingly. March 13th was when it all closed down. Where were you then, and where are you now?
Yeah, well, we have a program in Virginia called Virtual Virginia, which is our statewide virtual school that's available to every school division in the Commonwealth. And
wow.
For many years, that focused on just high school courses where, you know, a kid went to a school and they only offered maybe one foreign language and they wanted to try French instead of Spanish or something like that. They could come into our virtual school and take that. And frankly, we had built out over many years a pathway where you could basically complete any credit required for graduation in the virtual setting. And that was offered in all of our school divisions. Many schools before the pandemic, were focused on transfer students, credit recovery, and maybe supplemental in addition
mm-hmm.
to these credits.
Mm-hmm.
Our school was unique in that every teacher is certified in the state of Virginia. We meet We teach all standards aligned courses. So, you know, you can guarantee that the virtual setting you're getting is Virginia aligned, and it meets all of our standard of quality requirements. Now, the pandemic made us really reshift how we were focused. Originally, like I said, it was a program primarily for high school students. We quickly saw that we needed to have elementary options. We needed to have middle school options. We needed to have, you know, short-term options for kids that might be going virtual just for a few months or something like that. And so the first thing that we did is we purchased a learning management system and paid for it through Virtual Virginia so that every teacher in the Commonwealth, regardless of where they were located, could have a tool to teach from in a virtual setting. And that was the big first step with the pandemic.
Wow. Wow. How'd you get that together? And when did that happen? Because, again, the pandemic, March 13th. How quickly afterwards did you get that going?
Well, and that was one of the cool parts of Virginia being so uniquely positioned. We already had a learning management system inside Virtual Virginia. It was a matter of just expanding the cost of it to the state so that every teacher could then have access to it. And so we went from just delivering instruction from our Virtual Virginia teachers to now every teacher in the Commonwealth was in that tool. And what happened immediately was incredible. They were able to collaborate and share new virtual lessons they were creating. Their students were able to log on from home and all of those things that you traditionally see in a learning management system. We paid for that with CARES Act funding. That would not have been possible without the support of the federal government. It cost us about $5 million to launch that statewide. And now with CARES 2, we're able to continue that for the next 3 years. And then the General Assembly is already starting to make commitments to fund that in the long term. So we believe that this statewide learning management system built inside our virtual school is here to stay.
And I was just going to say, you bring up an interesting point. Eventually, and God willing, it'll take place this September. We'll all get back to school with the vaccine, et cetera. But we'll get back to, quote, I have to put air quotes, normal. What do you see happening, okay, in the future? Will all the kids go back to school? Okay, is that the goal, or will we start doing more virtual? Now that you have this in place, okay, what have you seen, and where do you foresee it going in the future in Virginia?
Well, I'll talk a little bit more about...
Which, by the way, is for lovers. I don't know whether you would deal with it, but it's for lovers. Virginia is for lovers.
Yeah, Virginia's for lovers is our tourism slogan. Actually, we took a version of that, and now for our education system, our motto is Virginia's for learners. And so
there you go.
I
love it.
Another huge part. So we talk about loving Virginia is about getting people to come visit our history, our mountains, our beaches. But Virginia's for Learners is about getting families to stay because we're a great place to raise children. So
yeah, and you did it right. Congratulations. Yeah. So go ahead. What do you see as the future now that you have all this in place?
So in addition to getting the statewide learning management system, we built courses K through 12 now that either teachers in their home setting can deliver to students, or we now provide teachers from Virtual Virginia, the school K through 12. We've put out content in every subject area. We now give out free virtual slots. And so one of the big things that I think with the future is, I think that we're going to have all of our school divisions open. The governor here in Virginia asked all school divisions to be open by March 15th, at least for what we call priority learners. And that is, you know, elementary students, students with disabilities, English language learners. But I think by the time we get to the fall, all of our school divisions will have in-person going in a much broader sense, you know, for all students. But I think that there's still going to be a huge percentage of our students that even by the time we get to the fall are going to choose virtual. And I think that even beyond next year into 2-3 years from now, I think that there are many students that need in-person instruction right away. That's why we're pushing it. But I think that there are going to be many students that are actually flourishing in the virtual setting. We're seeing way less bullying going on in middle school. We're seeing kids take courses they could have never taken. So I think the long term is that most of our kids are going to get back to in person because that relationship between the student and the teacher is too important. We've seen too much learning loss. We've seen too many mental health issues. We got to get kids back in person. But there will be kids who permanently choose whether it's a part-time, one course at a time virtual, or a full-time virtual. And I think that with what we've designed in Virginia, we're prepared to respond to that. We now have an option where if you want to be a full-time virtual elementary school student, which I don't necessarily recommend, we can support that with our district. And we've got, you know, if you need to, you know, you're a high school student and you want to work in the fourth block and go do work-based learning, we've got options for you to do your courses part-time. And so we have synchronous, we have asynchronous, we have all of that built out, because I think in education, we got to be prepared to respond to any student's specific need. And so designing flexible options for students is what's going to make that possible.
By the way, I love your enthusiasm. I can hear it in your voice. Okay, I got to tell you that. I just love it. And what you said a few minutes ago, you know, everybody is concerned, as well they should be, you did mention this, about social emotional learning. There are going to be challenges with that. Okay, but there is also there with all that and all this horror of the pandemic. I don't mean to lighten that at all. Okay, what you said was a positive. There has been less bullying. Kids who are afraid for whatever reason, okay, they could learn in peace. Okay, with the virtual world, and you know, I hate to say it, that is a positive these days. Okay, but some positive things are coming out of this, and if kids can feel safer. All right, at home, and I get recognized there's going to be social emotional challenges. Okay, it's something that's really, really good. And again, I love your enthusiasm on all this. I must ask, how do you, while the education is going and you're giving the kids the option, what about the options for educators, for teachers? A, are a lot of teachers opting to teach online? And since most of them are doing it now, is Virginia investing in professional development to train them to teach online, which most of them never had any courses in? What are the thoughts on that, James?
Yeah, and just to echo your comment, none of us would have ever wanted this pandemic, but I think we can use pieces of what we learned to build better than we would have been. And that's, I think, what this work that we're doing to build out better virtual platforms and blended learning opportunities is all about. In terms of teachers, we are facing an exponential increase to our teacher shortage. I mean, just being completely honest, a very high percentage of our teachers that were, you know, in some of those high-risk categories, especially over 65 or, you know, with specific health issues, just decided to retire rather than to even come back and teach virtual. And so we have got to make sure that we're working with, you know, our higher ed partners, with career switchers, to build some pathways to get more teachers in the classroom. But we got to make sure that they're prepared, like these amazing individuals that we're losing to retirement.
Yep.
And further, I would say Virtual Virginia has been unique in that we're not facing a shortage of teachers that are willing to teach virtually. And so whereas I believe that we still have to offer options for teachers who are at high risk to teach in the virtual setting. And with, you know, in any division, 20 to 40% of our students choosing virtual, even when schools are opening, I think that there are going to be opportunities for that. But I just hope that many of these teachers that are retiring early think about coming back, even in Virginia, to some of these virtual schools like our virtual school to teach, to fill the void. Now, for the teachers
great
that
idea.
Are teaching in person and all of that, I think that I think that virtual is, you know, many times we think of it either you're virtual or you're in person. And I think that the lines are going to be blurred over time, that teachers are going to use all these virtual tools that they've gained over the past 12 months to deliver instruction in a more efficient way in and out of the classroom with students. And so this training that you talked about is so important. In Virtual Virginia, our program, we offer weekly trainings to teachers that use our tools. From the department standpoint, we've invested a lot of our CARES money to go directly into training programs. We're encouraging our school divisions to use their CARES money to develop this. And I think that actually they've done so much good training over the last year, they're probably turning their focus to training in other areas, because our teachers have really gained incredible skills. The type of virtual learning that you're seeing today, 1 year after the school closures, is vastly improved on what we saw a year ago. And some of the outcomes that we're starting to see for students are you know, the assessments that we give benchmarks are showing that this is true. students are performing better now than they were right after the pandemic shut us down.
Well, they're getting used to it like they should. We're very resilient people, we human beings, and hopefully we'll continue to learn. I must ask, all right, and this I'm sure is a bigger challenge at the very beginning. Okay, we're very involved with equity here. And we know that nationwide, not just Virginia, certainly, okay, there were a lot of kids who didn't have access to broadband. Okay, which really kind of cut them off from learning. All right, what was the situation when the pandemic started in the great Commonwealth of Virginia, and how did you work with that?
Yeah, obviously broadband access is a huge issue. A large portion of our state is rural. You know that a lot of the vendors that provide internet to communities make their decisions based on density. And so, you know, you would go into our city or our suburban areas, and there would be pretty open access to the internet, and maybe only affordability was the issue in urban and suburban
mm-hmm.
settings. But when you get into rural Virginia, you know, even if we could invest money in it, there weren't really great short-term solutions. And so we put a ton of our CARES money, both on the governor's side and on the state set aside, into grants to support technology and school divisions. So, you know, we did over $18 million that allowed school divisions to buy computers for students, to
mm-hmm.
buy hotspots for students. But again, that didn't totally help with places where the hotspot wouldn't even access the internet. So
yeah.
We invested in the Virginia Broadband Initiative with tens of millions of dollars. The problem is, even with the pandemic, you know, putting up towers or running fiber, that doesn't happen overnight, right? And so we have a multi-year strategy that even with these investments, we know that we won't reach the last homes in Virginia till probably 2026, 2027, but we're putting the money in place to get that done. And in the short term, we're using the short-term solutions that we can. Our school divisions got really creative. I mean, one of my favorite stories is in Louisa County, where they actually built trailers, you know, like you'd pull behind a car, and put solar panels on the trailer to essentially power these huge Wi-Fi hotspots that they would set all over the community. And so the parent would drive to the grocery store, park their car next to the trailer, go inside, you know, hopefully with a mask and with physical distance, shop and do everything they needed to do, and then come out, and the kids' work was uploaded and downloaded for the week. We used our school buses. We were delivering meals, so we would send home flash drives on school buses. Our statewide learning management system is able to be used offline. We turned on Wi-Fi outside of school buildings. And so we just used all kinds of strategies to get that done. But we also did a couple really unique things. And one was we partnered with all of the TV public media stations, PBS stations in Virginia.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And they took one of their channels and dedicated at least 3 hours a day to doing live instruction by Virginia teachers on TV, on PBS, so that our elementary kids could stay caught up with live teachers. And then we partnered with an AM station out of Richmond, Radio Poder, 1380 AM. Now, you'd say, okay, AM, that's a very small, you know, amount of students that would be able to access that AM station. But they actually streamed their show online, and they gave families all over the Commonwealth a phone call, a 1-800 number, so they could call and listen to the show.
Wow.
We did live instruction in Spanish 30 minutes a day on Radio Poder, and so that any kid in the Commonwealth could at least get some connection to instruction, even in dual languages.
Wow. Wow. So all in all, as you look back over this past year, how do you feel about things? So, just from a personal anecdotal aspect, how do you feel about things? You're state superintendent.
Well, I mean, none of us would want this pandemic. We know that we have increased issues with student obesity. We have increased issues with student mental health. We have increased issues with student failure. We have learning loss. All of that we are going to address in the Commonwealth, and we're going to be as innovative with that as we have been with our virtual system. But I think that we have learned some things that will make us better educators, and we have put some things in place that will have long-term positive impact for our students.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the Commonwealth, in terms of how I feel about things, I feel like the Commonwealth responded as strongly as we could, and now we got to take these issues, these unintended consequences, and we got to build back better.
Absolutely. And, you know, you just said the two words that everybody is saying these days, James, and those are learning loss. And I'm curious about that, how we're going to move forward or compensate for that. Okay, and you know, I'm thinking to myself, everybody's in the same boat, from sea to shining sea to shining sea. Every kid is in the same boat. All right, so we have a baseline there. All right, and can we just say that we're going to have them learn a little bit less and have the colleges understand that for their college boards, and now it's going to be basically K-11 and a half something? What, in other words, how are we going to compensate for learning loss? We've got these kids for 12 years. Do we change the way they're going to be assessed at the end? What do you think's going to happen with that? Because obviously we can't keep up, can't make up for a full year, okay? It's too compressed. And how do you think we're going to do with that? You know, in other words, everybody's in the same boat. What do we do now?
Yeah, well, I think we keep the same high expectations. Yeah, it's a weird question, but I think we keep the same high expectations for students, right? We may not be back to where we could have been, and right, this notion of where we could have been if there weren't a pandemic is a little arbitrary, to be honest. But we may not be back to that. We may not be back to that point in 1 year, but we do get kids for 13 years, and we're getting a huge infusion of federal money. And so in the Commonwealth, we've put together a work group that we call the Virginia Learns Work Group. That's an acronym, but a few components of that acronym are about leading, engaging, and supporting students. And part of what we're trying to do with Virginia Learns is to create ideas for our school divisions on how to be most efficient with these remedial opportunities to get students back as soon as we can. So in Virginia, we're laying out some strategies and some scenarios where we've already got some school divisions that are deciding to go year round for next year, so that you know they can bring in more opportunities for students. Our governor has made that a priority. We also hear school divisions talking about what they call the fifth quarter strategy, which is essentially asking students to come in during the summer, maybe not year round from a permanent scheduling standpoint, but really doing a huge infusion this summer and next summer. We've got school divisions thinking about adding hours to the school day or creating some special Saturday sessions, maybe even just targeting those students that have specific needs, because everybody needs a break too. But I think that there will be no one-size-fits-all solution in Virginia, that each school division's circumstance is different. We've had some school divisions that have been open 5 days a week since the beginning of the year, and they really only had to mitigate maybe learning loss from just that small time between March 13th of last year to the end of the year. We've got others that have never opened one day, even as of today. And so they're going to have to do a lot more. And so we're going to tailor the needs in every community. But ultimately, I believe that with the right infusion of resources, with getting our schools open now, we can get students back to where they would have been and beyond, especially since we've learned so many of these new skills. Our teachers have been just incredible. And
I need
a break this summer, but I think that they're going to, you know, come back recharged to make a difference for our students. And the last thing I'll say on this is, you know, I do think we'll have to provide some special flexibility for the kids that are getting ready to graduate, right? Every state has different graduation requirements. There were some requirements, you know, we have one in Virginia that every kid complete a virtual course. Well, that's pretty easy to do, but we have other requirements that kids have to do hands-on first aid and CPR. Maybe we provide some flexibility there just to get kids to the finish line in these last few months.
Yeah, and has there been a conversation between the State Department of Instruction and higher education that says, hey, higher education's got to make some changes to accommodate these kids who did lose a year of school, okay, to make these kids change the test? Has there been any – I haven't asked anyone that question yet. Have you talked to higher ed about that at all? I don't know.
Well, it's interesting that it's good timing. I'm actually meeting with the Council of the board of our Higher Education Association. I met with the council presidents last fall, and we had some of these conversations, right, that, you know, in higher education, they still have the same expectations that students complete certain courses to graduate. But we might have more kids coming in with remedial needs, and what we can't afford to do is have kids take on more debt for classes that don't count. And so I think that
I love that.
We're thinking about partnering and how can we do post 12th grade graduation experiences with students in the summer that better prepare them for college, maybe booster sessions on the front ends and use some of our available CARES money to support some of those costs so that kids are ready. I don't know that every university is going to take on that strategy, but I know that many of our presidents are thinking about it, and so we're going to meet with our partners in higher ed, as I mentioned later this month, to continue to brainstorm on that. But one of the big things that we're seeing is just less kids, you know, suggesting that they're interested in going to college. We've seen 11% less FAFSA applications, which are the applications for free student aid, federal student aid. Hmm. And so what we've got to do is we got to make sure our kids continue to see college as an option. You know, there are less job opportunities right now, especially for positions that are, you know, aimed at high school only graduates. And so I think that our focus is not just on going to be remedying kids to be ready for that first day of college, but just making sure that they understand that college is a huge option for their future. And now is the time to, you know, while there's a dearth of jobs in many sectors, now is the time to move into higher ed and get yourself mm-hmm. training. That doesn't have to be the 4-year college. That could be a trade school.
Agreed.
That could be a 2-year college. And there are plenty of options out there. And so that's where our focus is going to be. Certainly getting kids so that they're successful when they walk in day one will be an important part of that strategy.
My standing line is, please tell enough kids to become plumbers and then immediately give them my phone number. Okay, because nobody's got to give them the number in Texas, you know, because we need tradespeople, all right? And what's the word on career and technical education in Virginia? How has that worked out over the past year? I'm curious. We always talk about the college readiness, but and by the way, do you have to be incredibly smart to be a plumber or a carpenter or whatever? Those are STEM skills as far as I'm concerned, all right? But just how's it going with career and tech, okay? How'd you do with that?
Yeah, we're continuing to make CCE a priority because we know that whereas we don't think that 11% less kids need to skip college, we do think that there will be kids who are better off going right into the workforce and right into jobs that are high paying. And it doesn't just have to be the very technical trades like plumbing. I mean, there are incredible jobs in computer science and other fields that
sure
don't necessarily
are.
Require a college degree. So CTE has continued to be a focus for us. Even in our virtual school divisions, we
Great.
Offer virtual CTE courses in virtual Virginia, and so those options are there. Many of our CTE teachers have transitioned well to the virtual setting. You maybe missed
Great.
Some of the hands-on stuff you could do, but there's a lot of really cool technology out there and the way you can simulate things. I mean, there are virtual welding programs and
Absolutely.
You know, virtual you can do CAD and design and all kinds of things in those spaces. And certainly even in the elementaries and middle schools, you know, my kids, when they were virtual, they would have their STEM class like they always would have, and they'd be building with, you know, toilet paper rolls and paper towel rolls and everything else, so that, you know, we just used what tools we had here in the house. And I think that our teachers obviously would rather see students in person, but we've been able to keep
Sure.
CTE moving forward, and we've been able to keep job training moving forward. Probably the greatest impact has been on work-based learning. You know, there just aren't a lot of businesses taking on extra workers while we're doing all this distancing, and so our students are missing out. And so we're trying to simulate and do as much of that virtual as possible. But CTE is one of those areas that has to be a priority for when we get back in person, because it's
Good.
What really links kids into school and gets them excited.
Absolutely. You know, I got to say something. I was a teacher, okay, at one point, and you know, you went to school to become a music teacher, and you did, and you in fact did that down in North Carolina, and now you're in charge of the full state of with a great team, I'm sure, of the Commonwealth of Virginia. All right, and look where you were, look where you are, and look what you had to lead us through, at least in Virginia. Okay, did you ever think you'd have to do anything like this? And look at the job you did and your team. You should be really proud.
You know, I mean, certainly none of us ever expected this. And you know,
no.
If you told me that at any time in my lifetime we'd be shutting schools down for up to a year, I would not have believed it. But I've been very proud of our team. I tell my team all the time, you know, we were built for this moment, you know, that we're here for a reason, because we're the ones that can be the most helpful to our school divisions. and our superintendents are where they're supposed to be so they can support their principals. Our principals are where they're supposed to be so they can help our teachers, and our teachers are where they're supposed to be so they can help our students. And that's how we think of our role as being in service to teachers, because none of us, there would be no principals, there would be no superintendents if there weren't teachers and students. And so at the end of the day, you know, in a lot of ways, I have felt called to this moment, and certainly we've made mistakes, and there are things we could have done better. But at the end of the day, every day we're doing the best we can.
You know, you sure are. And you know, one of the things, and I'll remind everybody what we teach the kids: there's nothing wrong with failure. That's the way we learn. Okay, we don't move forward unless we try a bunch of things, and it's what we try to teach the kids. Okay, about resilience. Okay, and we showed that, we teach that to the kids, and we did it ourselves this year. Okay, yeah, it wasn't 100% perfect, but we learned from every error we made, and look what we did, and you got to be proud of yourself. Thank you, Dr. Wayne. This was great. You're really doing a great job down there. You really are.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Glad to be with you today, as always.
You're welcome, James. Come back anytime and keep up the good work down there, okay? And enjoy spring.
All right.
It's coming. Okay, enjoy the good weather in Virginia. Go to the beach, okay?
Can't wait.
Oh, no, me neither. Thank you. James Lane, everybody. Dr. James Lane is the superintendent of public instruction for the Commonwealth of Virginia. They did a hell of a job, and they were somewhat ready for this, okay? And then they could just jump on that further, use the money the right way, et cetera, okay? Did a great job, okay? Lucky kids, all right? Good teachers. It all worked. So let's see what happens here. As we start to come out of this thing, I hope we all do. We're going to archive this show over at ace-ed.org, our consortium for equity. Please join with us over there and enjoy our magazine. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.